Accession number 5385, reel 5.
Mr. Greenberg, reel 5. Why was it that this note was sent saying that you hadn't got to work for the Japanese?
I really don't know. But when I reported with the Australian staff sergeant, I became an orderly in the Australian hut. And my sheet was half a length of bamboo. Could write with something, you know. The hut, all kinds of patients, with dysentery, with beriberi, with ulcers, not internal ulcers, ulcers on the legs. I was looking after about 6 officers. I remember a lieutenant's story one morning when they went on the ulcer parade. I held him, and I forget the officer's name, but he scraped all the pus off the shin, you know, because if you had a scratch from bamboo, an ulcer would develop because of your condition. It couldn't resist. And if, in some cases, chaps had their legs off. They never lived afterwards. They lived for about a week. Their legs were sawn off with ordinary saws.
With anaesthetic?
No. No. And we were like skeletons with sausage skins round us, you know. We had the ulcer parade. You know, when I worked at night, if somebody wanted to do a motion, I used to go to the platform, and he'd put his hands over my neck. I'd lift him up. I'd put the half a bamboo under him, and he'd do his motion. I'd wipe his bottom with some leaves, and I'd take that and put it in a large baking tin that I had. And when that baking tin was full, I used to stagger out somewhere in the jungle and empty it and come back and sterilise it in the fire we had going in the middle of the hut. You know, it was a big hut. But you see, I used to take photos out of the packs of Australians, you know, and show them photos of their family and say, this is what you've got to live for, you know. And a lot didn't. A lot didn't. It was so terrible to see the suffering. I remember a Sergeant Blaschke, whose family in Sydney are in the legal profession, and, you know, someone's a judge, I think, and that. And he died of beriberi, and it was creeping up. It affects the heart. You just die. It's water.
Creeping up his body?
Yeah, creeping up, yeah. He tried to commit suicide, I think. Smallpox broke out. All because the Japs had brought up some Tamil labour to help. They had to get the railway finished, you see. And the Australians were warned not to contact any of the Bungs, as they called them, you know.
Who were the Bungs?
Tamils, Indians, Bungs, that's an Australian expression. But they did, so they got smallpox. They carried smallpox with them. I think the... well, I didn't go, you know. But It's a tragic thing when you think that they moved up 800 English from Nikki to this camp of 400, you know, an 80, as we were, to help to finish the railway. And I went into the English wards to see one or two chaps. We called it a ward, you know, but it wasn't a ward in reality, as we know it. And they were very despondent because the railway was going to be finished sometime in October and we were all going back to Singapore. Now, to go back to Singapore was like going home. And it wasn't finished in October. It wasn't finished till sometime towards the third week in November. And a lot of English boys died. I can't give you the figures. I can't give you the figures. I'll give you some figures at the end. I came back from that camp in charge of a train of 400 in open trucks, and we did 200 miles or more, you know, to get back to Kanchanaburi. I had quinine tablets with me and when we got to Kanchanaburi, I went to hand in the quinine tablets. Nobody wanted them. So I sold them to the Thais, got some money, bought some bananas, duck's eggs, made myself thoroughly sick. I also received the first mail I had. Three letters from my wife.
How had she got to know you were alive?
She didn't. Oh, yeah. Well, I'll tell you. When we were at Thompson Road Camp in June 1942, we were given the choice of sending 25 words only. We were given the choice of three messages. And they received it at home September 43, and I'd written it in ink. How I got the ink, I don't know. And they thought I'd had a job in an office somewhere. Little did they know I was fighting survival, though, you know, in the jungle in Thailand. I can't describe to you the life in that. It is just too utterly utter. It wasn't real, or perhaps it was real. You only lived to eat, you know, and I think, I don't know. The night before I left Singapore, I had a prayer said over me by our padre. You know I'm Jewish, by the way. And he said a prayer of me. And I really think that helped me in some way. I don't know. We went by train, not in kettle trucks this time, but not very nice either, back to Singapore in early December 43.
Before we go on to what happened to you again in Singapore, were you awarded the BEM for what you did in Thailand?
Mm.
Can you tell me what your citation was for it's getting there. The BEM? Could you read it out?
Yes. Driver, Jack Joseph Greenberg. In April 1943, a large force of British and Australian prisoners of war were sent deep into the jungles of Thailand to work on the Burma-Siam Railway. At one of the Australian camps, cholera broke out in a virulent form, and this soldier, together with seven others, courageously volunteered to go and help in the difficult work of nursing the sick. He did gallant services during the epidemic amongst the cholera patients, working in mud and filth, in constant rain and without adequate covering, and was constantly exposed to infection from this disease, which took so high a toll of the forces. He performed excellent service, and for his personal bravery and steadfastness and self-sacrifice, he was a credit to himself, his regiment, and his country. And I didn't know this citation until my daughter got married. It was given to me after the party we had in the plantation house in the city. Yeah.
No, I interrupted you where you had just arrived back in Singapore.
We went into the G&W area where the 11th Indian Division had originally been when they were taken prisoner in 1942. Incidentally, I'd like just to reminisce, when we were in Serangoon Road camp, one day we heard bagpipes and we couldn't understand it. And there was a band coming down, bagpipes. It was an Indian band. It was the rebel Indian army under a man called, I think, Chandra Bose. And they were... The Japs had organised them, you know, they turned over to the Japs. And we were going on to all the jocks in the camp, look. that was in Serangoon Road camp.
That was before you went to Thailand?
Oh, yes, yes. That was in 42. So we go back to 43, December. We're in the G&W area. And I develop malaria again, MT malaria. And I was in hospital in the ward for 15 days. It was MT 3 pluses, which is pretty bad. In the April of 44, while I was in that G&W area, I remember some high-ranking Jap officers walking through the camp. And I heard them say, in English, I think, it will do the Anglo-Saxons good to suffer.
Did there seem to be a feeling amongst the Japanese that they wanted to get some, to take the British down a peg or two?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Amongst the soldiers, yes. Oh, yes. Oh, you know, what I've seen, the beatings and that, I'll come to it. Yeah. So, in April 44, we went into Changi Jail. Now, Changi Jail had housed, from 42 onwards, had housed the civilian internees who had then had been taken away and sent to Siam Road, which is another part of Singapore. We went into Changi Jail. I was in C Block, first floor, cell 7. Four of us in the cell. And our job was to help to build the aerodrome at Changi. And we used to work on three shifts. An all-day shift from 9 till 6, an early morning shift from 8 till 2, a late shift from 2 till 8. Very amusing. When we had our pint of pap, which is rice, you know, watery rice in the morning, we used to parade at 7. Used to eat at 6 o'clock. We used to have our pap, parade at 7, march to the airfield. You know, it wasn't an airfield then, but it was going to be. And everybody would stand in a line and pass water because the rice turns to water. You see, everybody in the line. I wish somebody had a camera. They could have taken a photo of it. Yeah, and. Then we used, you know, after doing work, we went back to the jail. Now, I did 6 months on the aerodrome, and I went sick with my eyes. And I went to see a Colonel Rose, who was an eye specialist, and he put me on the camp garden duties and said I wasn't to work on the drone, and I had deficiency keratitis, whatever that means. And I had to drink green leaf extract. So I worked on the camp gardens. And I remember one day, I did my back in, and I couldn't work, and I sat on a bench by a tent, and when 6 o'clock came, I had to go back with the rest of the lads, and they got me up to the cell. And I only lay on concrete, you see. And the MO came up, and he had aspirins, but nothing I could do. I was there for about a week, laying on the concrete till my back got better. Funny interlude, Guy Fawkes Day, 35 flying fortresses flew over Singapore. They were shimmering in the sky. I still see them. Terrific. You know, we were so, and the Japs put us back in the tents. You know, you mustn't look at them. An Australian was a bit funny with me about it, you know. So I said to him, trot your frame outside. And outside, we had a fight. I don't know what it was about. And the Jap came up, he says, boxer. They like that, you know. They like that.
Well, they like to see the POWs fighting with each other.
No, you know, they're just like, they like a fight, you know. They like a wrestling match or a fight. Or, yeah. It wasn't much, you know, it wasn't much. And that was that. But, and from the camp gardens, we were there I was in Changi like a year. We went to Kranji, which is near the which is near the causeway, you know, the causeway into Johor Bahru. And we were in a working camp, and there was a wire, and there was a hospital camp run by Lieutenant Colonel Collins, a medical man, and in there was also one of our officers, Captain Sefton, out of the 197 field ambulance. And he used to give me tooth powder. And our job on that working camp was to dig tunnels in hill sites 2 meters wide, 2 meters high, 10 meters down, and you'd have a pair of tunnels so that there could be, after digging 10 meters down, you would dig, go through, you could go right through, you'd dig right through the end of 10 metres, 2 metres wide, 2 metres high, you see. Then you dig another tunnel inside to link up with the other one.
Join the two parallel tunnels.
Now, I want to tell you the implements we had to dig the tunnel. A road pick, you know, a pick, just a pick, a shovel, and a little wicker skip with two handles to take the earth out. Now, we worked in parties of five. I had a Jap, we used to call him Yonju. He was 40. Yonju is 40. And he was old compared to us, see. And I was the fittest of the party of five, so I became the picker. I didn't pick properly until I was told by some Welshmen with us, Taffy Lewis and Taffy Johns, no, if you pick underneath, because they'd been coal miners, you know, at the time, if you pick underneath, all the top will fall down. If you pick at the top, you've got to still do the bottom. So I used to, when I'd finished picking, they used to shovel it out, and shovel it in the skips and go out. And I used to sit outside for a time in the boiling sun, and all my body get white, all the salt would come out. And then I'd go and help to put the earth over the side, and I used to run it. This Yonju, the Jap, ran him off his feet. Oh, yes, I ran him off his feet. he didn't mind. He didn't mind.
Why were you making these tunnels?
Well, the Japs, we understand, were going to put us in. You see, they knew Mountbatten was advancing through Burma, and they knew he'd attack the island. And they were going to put us in the in these tunnels and probably lock us up in some way. I don't know. We were on the. I was on the tunnels for quite a time, you know, and I remember going one evening, going down to the assembly point to be. Going on a truck to take us back to the to Kranji camp. There was an English boy being harangued by a Jap, and he was falling down. He was slapping him, See, the Japs slept just like the Germans. The German army slept. The Japs copied them. And he was falling down like a doll. He went down, he stood up. I don't know what he'd... We don't know what he'd done. And you couldn't do anything about it. And I remember, while waiting there, a Chinese in a shop said something about... Did he give us a paper? He said something about the war being nearly finished, you know. Well, we didn't know. And it was a terrible thing to see, a terrible thing to see. We went back to our camp that night, and then I was on a party of sawing props to prop up the tunnels, you know, came off the tunnel work and sawing, and we had quite a good Jap sergeant. He was quite decent, I think. And it was a good clean job. There was no dirtiness about it, just two of us on sawing the props. And that's where it was until August the 17th, because the Japanese would not pack in Singapore. They lasted out another 2 days, and about 12 o'clock on the 17th of August, the Jap sergeant said, "All men camp, go." So all men camp went in the lorry, and we went back. I remember going back and seeing a friend called Jimmy Bynes. He was in the Malay Volunteers. He said, "Jack," he said, "the war's over." I said, "Is it?" I went on frying something I had with palm oil. We used to cook our own food, you know.
Weren't you bothered?
No, no.
Or didn't you believe it?
Oh, I knew it. I knew it because Sefton said to me, he says, "Greenberg," he says, "Tojo has signed with the Parker Pen soon." That was some days before, you know. And of course, we couldn't understand it because we couldn't understand it. And that afternoon, the Jap sergeant in charge of the camp said, "The war in Southeast Asia is over. There have been many casualties on both sides. There will be no celebrations." Then Colonel Collins took charge of the camp. And he had the Jap, not put in irons or anything like that. He had them all working in the cookhouse. And I remember going to the cookhouse and saying, "Hey, Churchill number one, Tojo number 10. So there was nothing we could do in the camp to go out or anything. The Navy came on September the 5th. But before then, a British officer was parachuted into Singapore and took command. Of the island. When the Navy came, so I remember going down to Singapore Harbour, and I slept a night on an aircraft carrier between sheets. It was wonderful. I went to the naval base another day. I went on board a destroyer, HMS Mings. slept two nights on it, talking to sailors. Well, they were 10 years younger than me. And they didn't know anything that I knew, you know, and I didn't know anything that they knew. I remember them saying, there's a new crooner in the world called Frank Sinatra. When he sings, so all the girls cry out, "Come and get me, Frankie." But I went out with a couple of the sailors, went out to Jap ships. They all stood to attention. We said we wanted sake. Oh, yes. One of them, Gordon Beckett, I shall be seeing next month.